coming up on this week's mini episode.
76% of people, their number one regret in their entire life is not living their ideal self. So living the life that someone else wanted for them, not themselves.
My friend and business partner, Dr. Mark Hyman, told me sleep is probably the most underrated pillar of health. Without proper sleep, we can do everything else right and still struggle with chronic ailments like fatigue, mitochondrial dysfunction, blood sugar problems, hormonal imbalances, and so much more. So basically, your sleep is a lot more important than you think, and that's why we talk about it on this podcast so much. So part of getting quality sleep is setting up the right environment. For me, this means two things: temperature regulation and avoiding toxic chemicals at night. We spend so much time in our beds, 26 years to be exact, so why not invest in the highest quality bedding? So I recently started using bamboo sheets from Cozy Earth, and it's a game changer. For one, these sheets help regulate temperature. Huge. One of the biggest tips of all the top sleep experts that they'll share with you is that you have to make sure your sleep environment is cool. Studies actually show that sleeping in cooler temperatures leads to deeper, more restorative sleep. Here's the thing. Have you ever tried to sleep when it's super hot? It's pretty much impossible. I also love that I can trust Cozy Earth because their bedding is free of harmful chemicals. When I learned how many harmful compounds are lurking in sheets, blankets, and duvets, I upgraded to Cozy Earth and my sleep was wildly better for it. Did I also mention that they're the most comfortable sheets I've ever used? So right now, Cozy Earth is offering my audience 40% off. That's 40% off. Just head over to CozyEarth.com and use the discount code Drew40. That's Cozy, CozyEarth, CozyEarth.com, and use the code DHRU40. I definitely recommend checking out their super comfortable bamboo sheets and upgrading your sleep today. Hi everyone, Drew Perrott here. We're often pressured to pursue dreams that aren't actually ours. The expectation to become a lawyer, a doctor, to follow in the family business, or a number of other things can take us on a path purely focused on making other people happy and sacrificing our own happiness. My guests on today's mini episode, Ben Nempton and Chase Jarvis, talk to us about how to live a life without regrets and how we can design our lives to fulfill our own dreams through the power of creativity without getting stuck in the rut of only pleasing the people that we're close to and love. My first guest, Ben Nempton, is the number one New York Times bestselling author of What Do You Want to Do Before You Die? An important question that everybody should be asking themselves. He's also the star of MTV's highest rated show ever on iTunes and Amazon called The Buried Life. As the co-founder of the Buried Life movement, Ben's message for radical possibility has been featured on the Today Show, the Oprah Winfrey Show, CNN, Fox, and NBC News. President Obama even called Ben and his Buried Life team the inspiration for a new generation, and Oprah declared their mission truly inspiring. Let's listen in to my interview with Ben Nempton. And I've seen you open up your talks and you start off with, you know, when it comes to the end of our life, people regret something specific. What do they regret? Fill in the blank.
So most people regret, and this comes from a study written by a guy named Tom Gilovich, who's a psychologist, well-known psychologist in the USS. He's also a professor at Cornell. And he actually did six studies, but he wrote one academic paper in the journal Emotions. And effectively what he found is that 76% of people, their number one regret in their entire life is not living their ideal self. So living the life that someone else wanted for them, not themselves. Which for me, when I heard that, I thought, that's heartbreaking. I mean, the majority of the population is going to live their entire life, get to the end of their life when it's too late and look back and think, fuck, I blew it. Like, I didn't take time for the small things that were really important to me, or I was living the life someone else wanted. And I think that that is human nature to do that. I think there are many reasons why, and actually Mr. Gilovich found sort of three main reasons why humans tend to do that and end up with those regrets that we can get into later. But I think that for the most part, this idea that we postpone our personal goals, right? We push the things that we believe are important to us again and again and again, sometimes subconsciously, sometimes consciously. And we realize when it's too late that we actually really want to do those things and now we don't have time. So my goal is to remind people that really, like, you have permission to go after those things for many different reasons, right? Like, it's important for your own well-being, but it's also important for the people around you, because you can't take care of other people if you don't take care of yourself. And it has implications for your career in, like, sort of work-life harmony, as well as, you know, your legacy, because at the end of the day, you don't want to die feeling like that. So that's really a driver for me. And I think that that kind of says it all when you think about the work that I'm doing. It's really based around that core problem that most people are dying with regrets.
You know, there's a book that I came across a few years ago. It's called The Five Regrets of the Dying by Bronnie Ware. And messaged a couple times with her on Instagram. Would love to get her on the podcast one day. And yeah, you know, if you're familiar with her work, which I think you probably are, some of our listeners are not, but she basically was a palliative care nurse in Australia and would sit with people who are on their deathbed. And something really unique happens, I think, when people are on their deathbed. It's just that, you know, often if they're in an okay mental state, like, the truth comes out. The truth comes out. Going back to your analogy, in your 20s, you're worried about this, in your 40s, this, and when you're 60, 70, 80 plus, there's like, nobody cares anyway. So why did I give it so much?
Deathbed, you don't give a fuck.
You don't give a fuck. And so she started writing down these regrets. And one of the top regrets was, which comes back to the central story, I wish I had the courage to live the life that I was meant to live, not the life that other people wanted me to live. And I think that when I think about the Buried Life Project, the book, the movement, your talks, I often think about, why do you think it is that we give greater weight, especially when we're not on our deathbed, why do we give greater weight to the life that others want us to live when we're younger? And when I say younger, I mean younger than on our deathbed. Why is it that we give greater weight and that we put everybody else's deadlines, priorities, vision for our life ahead of what we internally might be feeling?
I think part of the reason is we really care about what other people think of us. And, you know, a lot of times to the detriment of our own well-being. And I definitely struggle with that a lot. You know, I care about what other people think about me. And it's something that you need to be conscious of. Are you making this decision for you? Or are you making this decision for other people? Not necessarily what other people want for you, but because you want to be seen in a certain way by other people. And so part of that is, you know, we've been exposed to this idea of what is success, which is ultimately, like, if you look at the five regrets of the dying, none of them cost money, right? It's actually, I wish I worked less is one of them, right? And it's, I wish that I lived a life for me, not other people. I wish I would have reconnected with people I lost touch with.
Old friendships.
So it's just ironic that these are the five biggest regrets that people traditionally will have at the end of their life. And none of them really cost a dollar. In fact, it's actually the opposite. People say, I wish I worked less. And so we're serving, we're trying to, we're not serving ourselves with these missions. You know, we're serving what we think other people want for us, or we're serving this image. And it's, I think it's human nature. And it's something that is like, you gotta build acute awareness or these reminders to pull you back. That's why death is such a good mechanism to remind you of what's important. And if you can keep death close to you, man, you have a crystal clear perspective, and it's just a hard thing to do. Like, I talk about it all the time, and I get lost all the time. So it's finding these things that pull you back to that true course. It's funny that the last line of the Buried Life poem is, you know, is tracking our true original course. And as you get buried, you get off course, and it's all about coming back to that true original course. And I guess from, you know, from the book, the top five regrets and what we've been talking about, that's kind of what it all comes down to.
My next guest, Chase Jarvis, is an award-winning artist, entrepreneur, and one of the most influential photographers of the past decade. He has created campaigns for Apple, Nike, Red Bull, and many others. And he was a contributor to the Pulitzer-winning New York Times story Snowfall and earned an Emmy nomination for his documentary Portrait of a City. He also created Best Camera, the first photo app to share images to social networks, and is the founder of Creative Live, where more than 10 million students learn photography, video, design, music, and business from the world's top creators and entrepreneurs. In this episode, Chase talks to us about how small, everyday practices can have a big payoff in our life for finding success. He also shares how we can cultivate our own unique path and tap into our creativity with this unique framework. Let's listen in. Sometimes people reach out to me, and I'm sure you get this all the time with your podcast and having done it for now over 10 years, that first step of, okay, I'm checking in. I'm asking myself, is the way you're working working? Is the way you're living working? And my answer is, okay, there's some things that are working out well, but maybe it's not. Let's say somebody's listening and they're like, maybe it's not. Then the next thing that they get tripped up on is, I don't actually know what I want. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that vision looks like.
Yeah.
So how is that first step taken following your framework?
It's through play. Just as an example, like, and you can pick anything. Let's just say the vision that you have for yourself, which is from where you're sitting right now, is totally impractical. I really want to have my own cafe. And I want to wake up in the morning and serve the neighbors, you know, coffee and scones, and I love to bake and I love to host, and I'm just making this up. The challenge with the way that most people see that is I have no idea how to like do all those things professionally and start a business and hire employees and lease a space and. And that makes you like, okay, I can't do this. Next thing. But if you're truly passionate about that thing, what about just having people over for a standing brunch on Sundays at 10 a.m. for your neighbors, where you're baking your scones and you're making that amazing single origin pour over coffee for everyone, or whatever the thing is that brings you joy. It's just starting something. It's doing something instead of nothing that moves you one step closer to your thing. I call these little explorations, and they're threads of curiosity that you have. And most people, they say, okay, great, I'm going to go work in a cafe. Well, maybe that's one step along the way. But I think when you go from 0 to 100 miles an hour waiting tables in a cafe, you're like, wait a minute, I don't think this is for me either. But what if you just played with the most simple ingredient, the most simple basic level of creativity that you could, that is an expression of that ultimate goal? And to me, that's where people get lost. And they think, I have to start a cafe. No, start baking scones. Or if you want to, you know, become a world-class marathoner, don't go out and try and run an ultra marathon. Run a 5K. Start running 2 miles a day. Do I like running? Does running give me a buzz? Great. Then do more of it. If not, try something else. And the thing that is the breaker for most people is simply not starting. I would rather start 10 things and realize they're not for me than to stay on the couch. And here's the kicker. You are not going to think your way out of this. Everybody thinks you can intellectualize your way off the couch or out of your head into the life you want. It's not true. It's action over intellect that creates results.
You know, kids naturally know how to play. We don't even need to tell them what to do. They just go and do it.
For sure.
And
that's another thing that's trained out of us, right? Because, oh, when you start to be laughed at if you just want to go dance, or if you are pursuing you're drawing with crayons, or fill in the blank, go back to 8-year-old me making a film. You know, most of my friends right now, I happen to be friends with plenty of filmmakers, so it wouldn't be too weird. But for any friend who's not a professional filmmaker, they say, you know what? I'm dying to make a little, just a little short film. I would say amazing, because now the tools are right there for you with the cameras that are pointed at us right now, both of them less than $1,000. You can make a film in a day. And that's not, again, that's not a feature documentary that's going to be up for the Academy Awards, but it's a film. And starting small with what you have right now. Most people, the way they screw up is they don't start. Again, action over intellect.
And I want to pick up on that theme of not starting and tie it into the question that I was bringing up, is that when you look at the reasons why people don't start, and
This is good stuff. I can't wait for this one.
Well, I want to look at the reasons of why people don't start. And there's a fundamental misconception of the creative process.
Yep.
Because part of creativity is that you're going to take risks. You're going to put yourself out there, yep, and that certain things won't work. Mm-hmm. And won't work might mean that in our definition of what we deem success is with that, and success isn't. So start even with just the fundamental creative process. First, you've taken us down the journey of why creativity is important, mm-hmm, because there's some people that didn't have that distinction,
yep,
that if you want to live a life that is for you, it must be designed, and that takes creativity. Mm-hmm. Now take us to the next step, which is that what does even the creative process look like, and how is a misunderstanding of it prevent people from starting?
Awesome question. Seriously, one of the best questions I've been asked. So I'm going to answer it in two parts. The first part is the framework for a creative process. And the second part is like what gets in the way of these things, because that's how you really opened that little sentiment there. So the creative process, and again, I am a very free thinker. I identify as a creator, and that's basically all I've done for my entire life. Adult life is creativity for a living. And after deconstructing my successes, mostly my failures, and, you know, thousands of creative projects, and as I said earlier, deconstructing the lives of my friends and co-conspirators and inspirators who were both successful and who have struggled, something else very clearly emerged, which is there is a process for any creative process. There's a framework. I've put it in the book. It's actually the main spine of the book, the framework. And I put it into four steps.
The idea.
Yeah. Idea. Yeah. IDEA. I is for imagine. This works for if you're going to cook a pizza or if you're going to build a life and anything in between, a business, bake a cake, decide what, you're going to become a pro dancer, anything. Imagine what's possible. Like truly imagine without constraints. We are generally constrained in our culture by a lack of big thinking because we're told to be safe and don't stick your neck out because there's saber-toothed tigers everywhere. And so I encourage people in the book to just for a moment, suspend all of the world's shoulds and imagine what was possible. And this is true even for your pizza or for your life. Imagine. Then, all right, design a set of steps that'll get you there. If I did this and this and this and this, that I would logically end up here. And for the pizza, it's okay. I'm going to get some pizza dough. I'm going to spread it out. I'm going to put my oven on the highest setting I can. I'm going to put sauce on whatever. I'm designing a set of behaviors that such that when I'm done, I will have a pizza. And in the course of designing your life, like, do you want to be overweight or do you want to be fit? Do you want to be, do you want to have a positive mindset? Or do you want to wake up and let your phone's email dictate what you do that day? These are all things that are designed. So I like to design a system of habits and beliefs and a mindset that will get you there. The next one is you're just executing against that vision. Arguably, that's the least fancy, but the most important. You're executing against that plan. Like you can't build a house without a set of plans. You're starting just nailing boards together and it's not going to come together very well. And then the last one, and again, this is true for every successful project I've ever seen. The last one is amplifying. And what I mean by amplification is, this is widely misunderstood, is the role that community plays in anything we do, in life, in any project. It's critical. We are social animals. Nothing we do is individual unless you're on a desert island and you're carving your spear to go hunt armadillo to eat for the night. The reality is that everything is a team sport. And for the people who don't understand this, just look at anything. Look at the results of a film, or a film is a whole bunch of people coming together. Even a solo musician, they took guitar lessons. They need to, when they play at the coffee shop, they need people to show up. And it's a massive misunderstanding that these things just happen. No, just like everything else we're talking about, they created it. They joined communities that existed in the world, and then they cultivated their own community around their work.
They had people that would pick them up when they fell down, would help them pick them up when they fell down.
Yeah. And so this system, you know, step IDEA, imagine, design, execute, and amplify, is a framework that you can really use to take on any project or in the macro, your life. So that was the first thing.
Yes, yes.
The second one was what people, you know, what often gets in people's way when they start doing this.
Yeah.
And this is, again, I love the combo of these two questions that you sewed together so nicely, because we get stuck in two different modes generally. We get stuck, and where I see the process break down is in the I and the D. We just go in a circle there. We imagine and we design what it's going to be like, and we go back and imagine, we design what it's going to be like, and we go, those are dreamers, which is awesome. It's awesome to dream. But if you never step into the execute and the community building, you're not going to get anywhere. Hmm. Right. And the reason that we don't do that is from fear, from what our parents are going to say, what our loved ones are going to say, what your boss is going to say when you quit, you're crazy, you're never going to make it on your own, whatever. We've told ourselves all these stories, and you know, we're just stuck in this dreamer loop. And then as an extension, maybe we're in the other half, we're in the E and the A, we're just executing somebody else's vision for our lives. And maybe we do have a community, but it's the community at a job that we don't love. And so we end up trapped, and we have this victim mentality. And it's also fed by a bunch of cultural pressures, and we struggle to escape it because we don't have the right mindset. So what I'm trying to, you know, and what I explicate in the book, and what I want people at home, like, I did not master this until very late in life, and I still succumb to it all the time. And that's why it's a practice, like establish a daily practice. There's nothing we're going to be able to perform perfectly. And what I'm just trying to put a, you know, put a program in place and a mindset in place for you that is the best compass, the best known compass on earth to get you where you want to go. And it's just this very simple process.
No one wants to live a life filled with regrets, or even worse, dying on your deathbed filled with regrets of the things you wish you would have done. But here's the thing. We have a chance to do something about that. Thinking about what we really want out of life now can help us fulfill our dreams and avoid that heartbreaking scenario later on of disappointing ourselves because we didn't have the courage to speak up about what we wanted and what we didn't want in our lives. We have to dial in that ultimate goal for ourselves and the life we want ourselves to live, even if it's not what other loved ones would choose for us. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Drew Perrott Podcast. If you did, share it with someone. You might make their day. You might make their life and help them avoid a life filled with regret. Thank you again for tuning in with this week's mini episode. I'll see you next week.